My name's Andrew. I'm the assistant minister at the church here. Some of you may not know that when someone becomes a Christian, begins a relationship with God, you make tiny steps. Sometimes in your life you make two steps forward, sometimes there's one step back. You make progress. You might start strong, you might have the right heart, you might want to go the right direction. Good intentions, but you don't always get it right. I think it's a little bit like that with environmental action. And I think it's like that for me. I'm taking two steps forward, and sometimes you take one step back. I've made progress, and I think I want to encourage you to make progress yourself. And I know that I've got good intentions, that I don't always get it right. So I don't stand up here as an example of complete and finished action, but neither do I stand up here as a model of someone who does nothing. But let me promise this, I do actually care about the issues involved. Environmental change. The IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the position is fairly clear. Most of the observed increases in the globally average temperatures since the mid-20th century are very likely due to the observed increase in the greenhouse gas concentrations that come from human beings. Every part of that statement has weight. That most likely it is the case that the increase in the temperature of this globe and the projected increase that's going to happen in the next 100 years is likely due to the observed increase in greenhouse gas emission. There's a projection that the global surface temperature are very likely to increase by 1.1 to 6.4 degrees in the next 100 years. The range of values is used from different models. What are the results? Just going to get a feel for sense of things. How much do people know about these issues? Who's read... we'll start with the reading. Who's read books on this topic? Okay. Who's seen the video of this? One, two, three, four. Studying it at school. Got one, yep. Two, three. Teaching at school. The results are predicted to be rising sea levels, increasing extreme weather patterns, changes in the amount of the patterns of rain, reducing agricultural yields, glacial retreats, species extinctions, and increasing the ranges of diseases. Things like malaria, the projection is they won't just inhabit or be restricted into the tropical zones, but will spread throughout the entire world. There's, on the scientific agenda, there's been a great debate. There's the IPCC, and there's a growing number of dissenting scientists. On the international agenda, there's the United Nations, the Kyoto Protocol. But there's also, as we found out last week, the APEC, the Sydney Declaration on Climate Change. On the political agenda, this is a massive issue. Every government or party has a position on this. Kevin Rudd, John Howard, the Greens, the Democrats, Family First. I'd imagine if Pauline Hanson even came back, she would have a position on global warming. I'm not going to make a comment on that. Please. Is she? Oh, I'd love to hear what the policy is. It's a TV and documentary hotspot. As you know, there was the Inconvenient Truth, there was the great global warming swindle. It's also a grassroots movement. This is one of those powerful things about this movement at the moment. This is where it's really at. It's what families do. It's what you learn about at school. It's discussed. There's tips, lots and lots of tips on it. I picked up this one. This is not talking about global warming, but it's about 50 ways to save the planet. Was in the early 90s. It's actually a Christian book. 50 different ways to save the planet. Things like recycling, adopting a road and helping to look after it, etc. And then even and nowadays, there's just more and more of these kind of books. I picked up this at the post office. I love it. It costs $10, but I checked the post office today and it was sold out. So I'm sorry, I don't know where you can get it. But Ian Keenan from Clean Up Australia has put it together. True Green, 100 ways, practical steps you can do to make a healthier planet. From things you don't really think about to just some very obvious things we're doing already. So for instance... And the issues of global warming are so related, interrelated with every other issue of environmental damage. For instance, the average Australian household produces 15 tonnes of greenhouse gases. uses 230,000 litres of water and creates 1.7 tonnes of landfill waste every year. I mean, it's hard to put your head around the first two, but 1.7 tonnes of landfill waste every year. And so there's ways of doing to reduce, to reuse, to recycle, and thinking through what we can do there. This issue is a grassroots movement. It's also accompanied with a discussion of broader issues. It's hard not to talk about the climate change scenario, but you also need to think about issues like limits on resources, like water, like peak oil, like arable land. It raises issues of sustainable development, deforestation, industrialisation, alternative energy sources and poverty. I think it's worth looking at these broader issues as well, because it doesn't matter where you stand, no one can argue. No one, I think, can argue that there are some human limitations and some massive implications as we fill the globe and industrialise. I studied physics at university and still have an interest in science, but I'm not really here to talk about science. I have my own political opinions. I'm a bit worried about putting the video on. It was nothing to represent any political opinions. I have my own political opinions, but I'm not speaking about politics. I'm speaking about today as someone who wants to hear God's word on the subject. Somebody wants to think, what would Jesus have to say on the topic? In your outlines, you're up to point two, there's environmental approaches, and I want us to think this one together. I'll do some interaction. A little bit later, we'll have an opportunity for questions. There's a few different ways of approaching the environment. Not everyone agrees on how to approach the environment. Some people are human-centred. Some people, as you can see on that chart, are animal-centred. Some people are life-centred. Some people are ecosystem-centred. The Wilderness Society and Greenpeace probably have a slightly different view on the environment. All apply their own focus. I mean, we'll come to climate change in a minute, but let's think of a dam. You want to build, or you don't want to build. There's about to be built a dam in India to provide water for a village in India. If you are human-centred, what kind of issues will be raised? I'll throw it to you guys. Yeah, creating jobs. So you ask the questions about, does it create jobs? Does it feed? Does it actually going to provide enough water for people? You could also come the other side and say, is it going to damage the prospects of humans? And are you going to lose some natural beauty that humans could observe? And so that's still a human-centred view of the environment. You're asking all your questions resolved around people, implications for their survival, but also the implications for their enjoyment. And also, if there are other approaches, if you're animal-centred, all your questions will be related about how it affects the animals and the people there. You could be further. You could be life-centred, so animals and plants, and concern about how it affects the plants that might be destroyed. Or if you're ecosystem, you look at the whole thing together. If you think about climate change, let's apply that. Human-centred approaches to climate change. What are the questions that are raised? Greenhouse gases. And the question is, what kind of questions are you asked to do? Like,
will it exacerbate the production of greenhouse gases?
That's right, yeah. Yep. Jenny?
With everybody living in coastal areas, real estate prices go down.
Yeah. A lot of financial implications. The richest people live in the areas that seem to be most in damage, yeah? What else, yeah?
Mining and fossil fuel companies and the whole economic implications of shutting down.
Yeah, that's right. The mining and the all of the fossil fuel companies and stuff and the implications for jobs, and you're thinking through, it's not just someone's job, it's someone's father's job or someone's mother's job and all the children and the implications, there's broad implications for any change. What else?
We have to, that's right. You have to change the whole human psyche if you think human-centered.
But you could even have human-centered approaches that would be radically opposing the increase of greenhouse gases. And so I'd say most of Al Gore's approach is a very human-centered approach, because what he's saying is he's talking about the future of the human race, the implications for the human race. That's still very human-centered. Some people do think more animal, bio, eco-centred. And so the question is, what does the Bible say? Are we meant to think about it, just how everything affects humans? Or are we meant to have a concern for the animals or for the natural ecosystems. Before we look at the Bible, I just want to say there's an ugly and unnatural divide. I don't know if you felt this, of Jesus versus environmentalism. One of the things I think is really ugly, and one of the things that screams as unnatural, is the divide between Christianity and ecology, between Jesus and the environment. It's often the case today. Someone who says they're into the environment, you think, oh, they're probably not a Christian. Someone who says they follow Christ, oh, they're probably one of those people who think it's okay to rape and pillage the world. The green movement, on the other hand, sometimes people say, you look at it and say, well, if they're not green, they seem to adopt an anti-Christian agenda. The Christian church certainly does hold often a deep suspicion of the green movement. There's this unnatural divide between one and the other. Is it just me? Can everyone, you know what I'm talking about? I think it could be traced back to the 60s, 1967 actually. There was a paper that came out. But before that, there wasn't a divide. We'll come back. Hide that one. Before that, there wasn't a divide. just think through, this is not a big one, but think through, there was a novel written before the 60s that was certainly had a God-centered or a theistic kind of framework. One of the greatest novels, it came as a trilogy. They made it into movies recently. What is it? Not Narnia? No, I was thinking Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings. And so Tolkien had a theistic view of things, and yet the Lord of the Rings actually pushes quite an ecological agenda. I don't know if you missed that. You might have missed it. But the cutting down of the trees was not a good thing. Okay. Anyway, what happened in 1967? Really fascinating. If you chase on the internet, if you write these words, Lynn White, put the reference up, Lynn White. If you ever want to see a influential article that was written in 1967 in Science magazine, this is the article that really set the crossroads between Christians go this way, environmentalists go that way. It was like an unnatural, it was the divide that sort of broke the two apart. And so even though his name's Lynn, I really get caught on that. Lynn lays the blame very much on the Christian church for the destruction of the environment. Now, how does he do that? He describes the impact of Christianity on the approach to the environment. You see, the old days, when there was a tree there, it had a spirit in it. When there was a mountain there, the mountain was sacred. The lake had a naiad or something guarding, a protecting spirit. And so we'd be careful before we cut down trees. We'd placate the spirits before we dam the lakes. And we'd fear the mountains, and so much so that we wouldn't mind them. But when people turned to Christ, he argues, things around them became common and not sacred. You can do whatever you feel like with the trees. It's a tree. You can do whatever you feel like with a lake. Who cares? It's a lake put there for you. Now, that mountain, that's nothing to be feared. And so the article says that Christians, because they desacralized everything, are actually to blame, and the Christian viewpoint is actually to blame for a lot of damage. Look at those quotes. Human ecology is deeply conditioned by our beliefs about nature and destiny, that is, by religion. That's the big point. Then Christianity made it possible to exploit nature in a mood of even difference to the feelings of natural objects. The next one. A couple more quotes. Yep. Christianity bears a huge burden of guilt. Hence, we shall continue to have a worsening ecologic crisis until we reject the Christian axiom that nature has no reason for existence save to serve mankind. Heavy blows. And so Lynn White is actually arguing that the solution for the environmental crisis is not science, but a new religion. And so he argues for what that new religion will look like. He said, we tried Zen Buddhism or something like that. And he said, it's not quite right. It doesn't quite work in the Western world. But it's some sort of religion that returns sacredness back to creation. Well, is he right? Is it right that Christians are really to blame for all this? Does following God mean that we can do whatever we want in the world? We can just pillage it, destroy it? I think in this year, in this article, Christianity was profoundly misunderstood and distorted. And I think to accept that if you're a Christian is a profound distortion of what it is that we are meant to do. I think the divide is ugly and unnatural. Yes, there have been some Christians who have been bad guys. I mean, a lot of us have done things that are horrible. And a lot of us, and there have been particular those who pride themselves on driving the SUVs and burning up as much oil as they can because they want to speed on the end of the world. I think there's a country that has a few of them. My mum's an American, so I love America anyway. And even, you know, in past times, I think I've been a little bit derisive, and I've seen a bit of change in myself over the recent times over this issue. While some Christians have been bad guys, they're not all. And certainly our Lord God has something to say. On the other hand, while many environmentalists have had anti-Christian agendas in lots of departments, yet we shouldn't throw away everything that has to be said, like the 100 tips to save the planet. Well, I suppose the question is, can I be both a Christian and an environmentalist? Should I conserve water, choose low-emission petrol, petition for the signing of Kyoto Protocol, grow my own vegetables, sell my car? I don't know if we can. Turn lights off. We've seen that human-centred plans, animal-centred approaches, eco-centred angles, what does God's word say? We're going to grab a break in just a little while, but I just wanted a time to talk, write down questions, have a discussion amongst ourselves. But I want us to think through, just briefly, the Bible has this huge breadth. From the very first page to the very last page of the Bible is a story of God's overarching love for the world. First page of the Bible has this: in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and God saw that all he had made, and it was very good. He made everything, human beings, animals, ecosystems, and it was very good. He looks down and it was good. And you go to the last page of the Bible, it's the second quote there, looking forward to God's recreation of all things, and there's movement. The beginning is described as a garden, and the end is described as a city. Some Christians have seen this as justification for the concretization of the planet. Somehow that God is moving from a Garden of Eden to the city of heaven. But look at the way God designs the city. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life bearing 12 crops of fruit and yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. What strikes you about the city that God's making in the end?
It's green.
It's green. It is. God is actually preparing all things for a city. And in the city is grass, gardens, rivers, trees. And so it's not a concretization or anything like that as a picture. Now, I think that's important to see. I think that was only a recent realization. I knew that there was a move from the garden to the city, but I hadn't really realized there was a move from the garden to a garden city. What's the place of people in all this? God made man in his own image, the image of God. He made them male and female. He created them. God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground." We're made in God's image. We're put here to fill it. There isn't a word there. This is one of the words that disturbs a lot of people. To subdue it. Okay? To farm it. To grow fruit. To raise families. Over the birds and the fish of the creatures. And this is what we do. I don't know anyone who wants to be ruled by a fish. Or who has a dog but actually says, "No dog, you can tell me what to do." Or waits for the dog to provide it food. Now, just the realistic picture is we actually do rule. Doesn't matter what you think. We do rule over the fish. And that's the point. We wouldn't have this discussion. The dogs would be having this discussion about the world and the future of the world if they ruled it. It's humanity that might have been vandalizing it, and humanity that has to do something about it. And yet, I mean, and here the language is ruling. Rule over the fish. Fill the earth, subdue it. Sometimes we people hear that ruling language and take it as abusing. It doesn't say abuse. I mean, God rules over the world. And isn't the picture of God ruling the world is kind, loving, gentle? And the ruling is, the second one here is a little bit later in Genesis. The Lord God took the man and put him in the garden to work it and to take care of it, to protect it, to guard it, look after it. And the one last thing about humanity, I wouldn't be doing it justice, is that because of our rebellion against God, our bodies will die one day. And there's a humility that comes from those words, dust to dust. From dust you were created, to dust you will return. And so we can't actually be overly me-centered, maybe even not even overly human-centered in our approach to the environment. A couple other things. God provided this law for the people of Israel. And I'll just show you a couple of these ancient laws. I had to include the first one. Look at this one. It's an unusual one. When you lay siege to a city for a long time, do not destroy its trees by putting an axe to them, because you can eat their fruit. Do not cut them down. Are the trees of the field people that you should besiege them? That was a funny one. you know, are the trees of the field people that you should attack them? I mean, we've got nothing against them. They did nothing to us. The point is, don't cut them down. The reason is that we don't work 7 days a week, or hopefully don't work 7 days a week, is thanks to the law of that on the seventh day we're meant to rest and also protect the weak and vulnerable. Now, which of those sort of strikes you as touching on the environmental issue? 6 days you shall labour and do your work, but the seventh is a Sabbath, that's a rest day to the Lord your God. And they used to practice on Saturdays, have a day of rest. On it you shall do no work, neither you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, your maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. And so there's provision even for the animals they care for. It was meant to look after all the humans, the poorer humans who are working with you, and to look after the animals by giving them a rest day. I think most of our dogs have 7 days off. but it's actually true for the land as well. If you go to the next slide, there's just another law. It's for 6 years. This is not 6 days and one day off. This is 6 years. Sow your fields for the 6 years. Prune your vineyards and gather their crops. But in the seventh year, the land is to have a Sabbath of rest, a Sabbath to the Lord. Do not sow your fields or prune your vineyards. Do not reap what grows of itself and harvest the grapes of your untended vines. The land is to have a year of rest. Now, most of us will know that it's good to give your crops, having a cycle in your crops, have 6 years and then a year off, or whatever cycle you use. But the point is, here it's not given for the humans. It doesn't say have 6 years and then 1 year off so you can get better crops out of it. It actually just says the land is to have a year of rest. There's something about God's creation that even the animals are to be protected, but even the land is somehow to have rest. It should not be exploited and sucked dry. And there's a last little one I had to include. A righteous man cares for the needs of his animal. Christians might say that, and it's true, that righteous people care for the poor, which is true, but it says the righteous man cares for the needs of his animal. Now, if that territory was fairly unfamiliar, I'm going to move to one more, even more unfamiliar territory. We'll have, as I said, we'll have opportunity for questions and comments in a minute. There's a book of the Bible that's been called the greatest poem ever written. It's the book of Job. It discusses the problems of evil, of suffering, of finiteness, of trusting God in our suffering, our finiteness. And at the end, God speaks to our hero Job, and he says these strange things. These might surprise you, they're a little bit unusual. What are we going on about here? He's basically saying to Job at the end, look, Job, you're just a human being. You don't understand how the whole world works. You know, we think we're so much. We're dust, we return to dust. We think a lot about ourselves, but he said, do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you watch when the doe bears the fawn? a little bit later on. Does the eagle soar at your command and build his nest on high? Another one. Who cuts a channel for the torrents of rain and a path for the thunderstorm to water a land where no man lives, a desert with no one in it, to satisfy a desolate wasteland and make it sprout with grass? What do these mean about the environment? I've got something to say. What do you think? What does it tell us? We can't control it all the time. Now, God is actually behind it. Yeah? You know, when any animal is born, it's saying that God is watching. When every leaf falls in the Amazon, God watches it fall. Every fish that's swimming in the ocean is under the gaze of God. And that's this astonishing claim about God. And he watches everything. And the last one shows us that he watches even where no man lives. And that is significant. God is watching the Antarctic. And he sees everything there. He cares about the penguins. He knows even when the wind raises up and when it goes down. He sees everything that's born. And there's something deeply special about the environment, the lake, the mountain, the animal. They're not possessed with spirits. But that was wrong. But what makes them special, I think, is that God watches them. Is that profound? I think that's profound. That God actually cares. He watches and he knows. So we actually have an approach to things. If we chop down a tree, we know God's watching. If we dam a lake, we know that God's taking an interest. When we mine a mountain, we know that it's his mountain. I'm not saying we shouldn't chop, dam, or mine, but we must do it with him in mind. He's the owner of the land. I don't think it would be too far to say that it's all crown land. And God wears the crown. Now, that's got to temper some of the things we do. Some of the attitudes. I have a big car, a big family, a Tarago, and I own the Tarago. Now, if someone comes to me and scratches the Tarago, have they offended the Tarago? It actually offended me, the owner of the Tarago. It may be even worse if I made the Tarago and owned the Tarago and someone scratched it or smashed it up. I mean, this view shows that if we rape and pillage the world because we think we can do whatever we feel like, we're actually not doing anything against the world. As we said, it's desacralizes, but we might be doing something against the God who made the world. Well, when we get to the New Testament, there's a reaffirmation of the value of creation. I mean, Jesus himself said, if any of you had a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take it out and lift it out? There's a few other verses. Jesus says, God knows every time a sparrow falls to the ground. And as we've sort of seen today, he knows even the sparrow that falls to the ground that happens on the other side of the world where there's no human being. Makes me think of that idea, if a tree falls in a forest, God hears it and God sees it fall. There's another one, Acts 14, where it says, God has not left himself without testimony. He's shown you kindness by giving you rain from heaven, crops in the season. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your heart with joy. God actually is behind all this for our benefit. And yet we can't just turn around and take it without thanking God and deciding that we're just going to take it for granted. Well, I said at the beginning that God will recreate and restart with his glory and make it all right. And the teaching of the Bible is the world will end. The day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed by fire. The earth and everything in it will be laid bare. Since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought you to live? You ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. That day will bring about the destructions of the heavens by fire, and the elements will melt in the heat. But in keeping with this promise, we are looking forward to the new heaven and the new earth, the home of righteousness. The Hippocratic Oath that a doctor takes says that they will do all that in their power to save the life of the patient. What if all the doctors said, well, all my patients are going to die eventually, so why bother doing anything about it? What if we said that our bodies were going to be destroyed and so we'll never look after them? If this world has a use-by date and everyone agrees on this, you're an atheist, you agree that the world has a use-by date. Okay? If you don't, I'll point you out to some science textbooks. If you're a Christian, you believe that the world has a use-by date. If you don't, I'll point you to a verse like that and some science textbooks. Just because the world has a use-by date, it doesn't mean that we do not act, that we do not look after our bodies. In the meantime, we're waiting for them for ourselves. We know we're going to die anyway. We are still put here like Adam and Eve to rule, yes, but to take care of, yes, this world. One of the aspects of any approach to environmental issues, like global warming due to carbon emissions, one aspect that any approach to environmental issues must deal with is greed. This is an aspect that any environmental issue must deal with. I reckon that the Bible is much more honest than almost any other approach to this, though. That God's approach actually says, hey guys, there's a big problem here. It's greed. One of the biggest problems about the self-centered approaches to the environment is greed. There's greed in rich countries. There's greed in poor countries. There's no exclusive claim to greed just because we're rich. There's no exclusive claim to greed if you're poor. I mean, think about how does greed in rich countries show itself? Tell me. In terms of... I'll do the rich one, you do the poor one. Okay, think about the poor one. We want more things. I want more things. Like, I don't know about you. I get shopping centers. I go to Aldi even. I go to the most alternative shop I can go. I go to Aldi, and then they have that section in Aldi with all those cheap things, like cheap whippersnippers for $30 and all those... You know, and you want. I did buy a whippersnapper actually. But you want more things. You want to keep up with the Joneses. You want the most comfortable life that you can have for yourself and for your kids. But I suppose it becomes greed when you don't really care how that affects anyone else or the world or the implications. What about greed in poor countries? Because as I said, I think it's totally idealising to say that greed is just an element in the rich countries. What about greed in poor countries? How does that manifest themselves? Because we're talking about some of the poorer countries that are going to cause, as they industrialise, a heck of a lot of more carbon into the atmosphere than the rich countries. Dre?
There becomes a divide between the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah. The things we take for granted, they idolise, and I think if only I have that, I'll get better. And all those things that require power and other things like that. There's desperation drives you to do anything to survive. Now listen to the Jesus diagnosis. Jesus says, for from within, out of men's hearts, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, and greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. He doesn't discriminate. It's not just rich people. It's not just poor people. It's a human problem. And it's going to affect the way we treat this world, the way we treat others, and most importantly, the way we treat God. Well, what can we do about greed? I mean, trying to tackle the issues of environmental by dealing with greed. How do we do that? It's almost impossible. In fact, it is impossible to think that we can somehow change the world by dealing with the greed issue, isn't it? No? We can somehow do something that's going to make no one greedy anymore? Almost every solution that that you hear of doesn't deal with greed. It just allows for greed in some sort of monetary kickback or some sort of some way of doing it. Just think about this scenario, just if you're not convinced of the whole greed thing. Imagine if we somehow got the world to this state where we gave everyone the same amount of money, everyone the same amount of technology that everyone could be sort of equal with each other, and the same footprint they could have, environmental footprint they could have on the world. We gave everyone. Just imagine we could somehow do it. We eliminated poverty overnight. How long would it take before we had rich and poor? I reckon 5 minutes. Someone gets a gun. Yeah. As long as it takes for someone to kill someone, or to take it from them, or to offer them a job and not pay them, or to give them a job but underpay them, or for family or people to gather together as a mob and take it from those who are underprivileged. And so you actually think, every solution, we've got to deal with this greed issue. If you don't deal with greed, we can't actually solve it. But the problem with greed is we can't change the heart. Now, ultimately, it will take God. This is why the Bible is not a... it's not weird in the Bible's thinking that God's going to recreate everything. Because ultimately, that's the only way it's going to work. That God will remake the world, only this time without greedy human beings. But that would mean no human being would be there. I certainly wouldn't. None of my family would. And I know that because Jesus said we're all guilty, that none of us would. And that's where we get to kind of the heart, to the cross of Christ. Jesus deals with our greed. There's two ways. First way, first of all, he saves us. In his death, he brings forgiveness. Before God, pays the price for our vandalism for the world. And one of the sins he died for on the cross, one of the things that we did against God was our vandalism of the world and our ignoring God, the manifest disregard for God. And for those who accept he gives forgiveness, Christ died for sins once for all to bring us to God. That's the big message, the heart of the gospel. That means that there's going to be people who are saved in the new world. More than that, Jesus' death, that is his voluntary giving up of himself for the sake of others, becomes a model of our approach to greed, a model of our approach to dealing with other human beings, to break the cycle of people ripping each other off. See, the other way Jesus deals with greed is being a model. He said, whoever wants to become great amongst you must become a servant. Whoever wants to be first must be a slave. Just as the Son of Man, just as Jesus did not come to be served but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. If people were followers of Christ, what would the rich countries do? Christ was rich. He gave up of himself for the sake of the poor. He gave of himself for the sake of those who'd done the wrong thing even. And if people were followers of Christ, well, I suppose the question is, it's not just countries, but what about us? To relate rightly with each other and the planet, we need to start with God. Those who are followers of Christ, there's a strong word that we must think of our neighbour. We must value our planet. And most importantly, respect God and put some of our comforts behind that. It's a high calling. It's a part of who we are in Christ. I suppose if you're not yet a Christian, one of the things you need to do is deal with God. If greed is one of the problems, he's offered a way to forgive, a great way of peace, a place in the new world. But we invite those who are Christians to be more Christ-like in this regard. Now, this is going to have massive implications. We're going to actually have a coffee break, come back and discuss what we can actually do. I want you to actually throw all your questions and kind of a discussion forum. But I want to just make one point very, very clear again. And this is something that I've found really helpful, is that I can do the same thing as someone else is regarding, like one of these 100 ways of doing things, but I have a new motivation. What's my new motivation? I can do it not just being human-centered, not just being animal-centered or eco-centered, but actually God-centered. I can save. I can turn things off. I can recycle because I want to look after what God's given us. We're going to have a few minutes, grab a coffee. Can I just say also, that fruit there is absolutely fantastic. I had some of those grapes before. Praise be to God for those grapes. And we're going to come back in a few minutes. There should be on your chairs. Oh, okay. Now, we're doing the right thing here. And one of the ways of doing, and I want to commend, is to buy... Oh, it says here. Yeah. It's very small. Fair trade coffee. I mean, it's one of the ways. This is a way of looking after the poor people. It doesn't cost much else. It's organic as well, so it looks after the world. Thanks, mate. And it's coffee because it looks after us. write down any questions you have on the page. We'll do some questions on those if you have any questions you've been nervous about asking or something. And you can just put them on one of the front chairs. And afterwards, we'll have some questions back and forward. Discuss what are we actually going to do about it, though. Okay, let's have some tea and coffee and discuss from. It says over and over again, it actually matters. Yep, Ian? Exactly. And therefore, yeah, that's right. To do it without caring for the owner of it is actually a crime against the owner. And so it's not that Christians deny that there's anything such thing as environmental crime. It's just that the crime is not against the environment but against God, which is actually a bigger thing. In the end, we have to answer before him. I think that's one of the powerful ones, just that little image that God actually watches things that we don't even see. He's watching something that's going on in parts of the world we don't even know about. God's bigger than us. Yeah. There's a basic problem of greed and brokenness. Yeah. Massive problem. Yeah, Ian. This is really good. This is encouraging, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you. This is fantastic. Love it. Yep. Yeah. That's right.
The earth is crown land.
That's a good line, isn't it? We have a lease on it, but it's only a lease, you know. At the end, it goes back to God. Okay. Can I ask a quick question, just as another summary question? Am I arguing that we should be human-centered? No. Am I arguing that we should be animal... life or eco-centered? No. What am I arguing? God-centered. But actually, that's the right... I think that's what the Bible actually says, is God-centered environmentalism. And so you actually have the same cares and worries, even, although we'll talk about how much to worry. I think that's an important issue. As people who aren't Christian, who don't know God, but if you are a Christian, you've actually got a new reason to care. That's for God's sake. Okay. If we're God-centered, what is it? Thank you. I'm glad you asked. That's good. What I might do is just run a couple issues that I just wanted to sort of summarise, but just what we just said, and then I'll throw it to the questions. No one came up with any written questions, but we're a small enough crowd just to throw it back and forward. I'm not standing here as an expert, particularly on issues. I'll just give you a few rules of play. I don't want to get too political, okay? Although you can't ignore politics, because politics is about global issues and that sort of thing. So you kind of ignore that. And I also want us to... I want to hear different people's opinions and ideas, because a lot of you have done a lot more thinking on particulars about things we can do. I'll just go through a couple, just quick summary points I'm going to say very quickly. God-centered, okay, that means we do it for his sake. Christ-focused, that means we take after his model, okay? And environmentalism, we actually care about the environment. And that's basically what I'm arguing for. That it's actually okay. We can be God-centered and Christ-focused in our care of the environment. Quickly go through them. The true recipient of vandalism is God. If we vandalize the world, we're doing against God. Next point. We avoid arrogance or idolatry. Like, what I mean is, if we're just human-centered, we become very arrogant in our approach to the environment. We can do whatever we feel like because it just matters about affects me, affects even just other people, and we can actually throw off God in that. We're idolatrous. If we think the whole world is just about animals and plants and the world itself, we can also ignore God. Next one. It shows that Christians are not at war with environmentalists. That you actually can be a Christian who cares deeply about the environment. And I hope that we become a growing number of Christians who do. Next one. Deals with greed. Next one. I just want to make a quick comment on this one. Avoids fear campaigning and mono-issue-ization. No. Thank you for asking. fear campaigning. What I mean is, one of the approaches to any issue is, if you want people to act on it, you just scare them to bits, and they'll do something about it. Okay. I just want to say I've not said much negative, critical about the environmental movement at all so far, but I want to say one thing that I think the fear campaigning is an ugly side of the environmentalist movement. Okay. I think it's a very and I think it's a way that we actually have a strength in this. We can still see it as an important issue without being frightened. Sometimes in this world, we know the things that people are afraid of, and there's been different cycles in the history of the last 100 years of different things that people have been terribly afraid of. What are some of the big fear campaigns that have been run in the last 100 years?
Communism?
Sorry. Communism, terror, yeah, Dre?
The whales were getting extinct.
Whales were getting extinct. No, I'm not trying to be political, but it is end up being political. But there's been sort of a fear campaign, particularly the nuclear one, I thought was a big one. There was a real worry when I was only a little baby, but when some of you remember, that the world was going to be destroyed by nuclear warfare. Okay? And we have the power to do it. That's the scary thing. So there's a reality to it, but there's a fear that is unhealthy, I think. Christians actually have, those who trust in God, actually have an advantage over this fear thing. You know, the Bible says, do not fear what other people fear. Do not be afraid. Trust in me. And we can avoid the fear campaign by saying we can still think it's a real issue, but we actually don't have to be only motive. Fear doesn't have to be the only motivation. It feels like if you want anything happening, you have to make people scared, and then they'll do something. But there can actually be a motivation of actually doing it for God's sake, a liberation. They actually do it out of love for other people, love for God, love for the world. And I suppose there might be some fear involved, but it doesn't the only thing. And the mono-issuization, I think that's very, very important. What do you think that means, mono-issuization? Yep. As in, we're only focused, tunnel vision. The only issue in this world is global warming. Does it have to be? It feels like it's either or. Like, we're presented with this either or. It's either everything's about global warming, or you just don't care about it. Now, that doesn't have to be the case. We can think that valuing God's creation, that one of the big issues is global warming. One of the big issues is how we treat this world, but there are other significant issues in this world as well. And I think it's very important to avoid. And being God-centered, Christ-focused, actually avoids that mono-issuization. Poverty is actually an issue. this world, let alone how we relate to God, let alone what God's going to do. Okay, a couple more and then we'll throw to questions. I advocated the Christ-like approach, which I think is the approach that those who have should give up for the sake of the have-nots, rather than the haves demanding that the solution comes from the have-nots. Okay, next one. Calls for serious action. If we actually want to be God-centered, in the end, it's not just a matter of talk, but it's got to be action. Okay, last, and what most do. Throw your questions, comments, and we'll have a general discussion. Who's going to? Questions in the back. Yes, Jody. Oh, sorry. No. That's a real question. No, that's a great question. Yeah. Let me say a couple of things. I think on that, and then I'll actually throw it, anyone wants to add anything to my comments, because we'll have a discussion back and forward. I think, yes, it can be certainly very human-focused, just like the other. But I actually think they both should be God-focused. And I think that liberates a lot of things. If you say, whatever we do it for God, whether it be doing little things or big things to look after the environment, or actually, for God's sake, trying to bring some more people home, lovingly sharing the good news with them so that they can come back to a relationship with God. But I think I think actually they are in the end both God-focused issues. But Christians don't need to be mono. But you don't have to be just mono-issuized. Let's make that even longer. Do you like that, do you? I want to see a Wikipedia entry on mono issue-wise before the night's out. come on, put it on. I don't think that we have to play anything off each other like that. I mean, there will be times, I suppose, when we have limited time, limited resources, and we have to sometimes make a priority decision. And I think, in the end, if we come back to that issue of Jesus dealing with greed, I mean, the ultimate, probably there is a priority over of helping people to be saved and to actually have a home forever in heaven rather than a home for a short time here on earth. But it doesn't mean we can't still have a care for the other. Does anyone have a comment or question on that? Because it's quite an important issue. Yeah, Pete.
Could we then, if we've got a mission 4 days, we should have a mission environment 4 days where we actually look at the environmental problems and try to help, especially in this area.
Yeah. Pete's saying we could have a mission caring for the environment for a few days. You mean not care for the rest of the time? Or you mean no?
Yeah,
no.
Sure.
Yeah, you could. I mean, or you could just jump on board of the things that other people are doing. it's not a particular thing to the church that we, you know, other people for different reasons have set up things already to care for the environment. I don't think it's a I know some churches have done something like that. I suppose it's a it would have to be, if we go back a couple one slide. As long as it was God-centered, and I think Christ-focused, I think you could do it. Yeah. Anyone have questions or comments on that? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think one of the important principles is we're free. And there's another verse. I've got a few verses today, but one of the verses is what God has showed you, O man, what is good, that you act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with God. I think there's a huge freedom to work out what you do, but when you're doing it for God's sake. I think it's the important issue in any of these decisions. There is a, as I said, there is an urgency for this beautiful new garden city that is going to last longer, and so there is a priority, I think, for people being in the city that will last forever, that will never deteriorate over the world that's deteriorating. But at the same time, we still love and look after this world. But how you balance it, I reckon lots of people are going to make different decisions. Yeah, tell us the small things. What kind of things?
You talked about evangelism. You talked about committing yourself to how much can you do. We're not all ministers. We're not all meant to be like a surgeon. Let's start with what you are capable of. What you are capable of.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking, well,
can't do it. It's too big. Yeah. Yes. Please do.
Last week going through a 300-page report, an independent report in the need for a new power station for New South Wales. It's basically for the baseload power generation, otherwise the lights go out in 2013.
Yep.
And it's very, very comprehensive. Put together by one of the senior professors in this area, and he goes through all the different technologies that are available.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on, what do you feel that there's a Christian response to that report, or a Christian response to the issue generally?
Yep. I think the Christian, I think the Christian response to very complicated issues like that may not be in the particular answer they give, but maybe in the questions they ask. Because I think a lot of Christians would come at the question like that and might come up actually with different answers. But what matters, I think, is the questions you ask. So what kind of questions? Let's help out our... Was that for...
the report.
Yeah, could you... Do you know what I mean?
I would inquire into the negative place.
Okay, that's cool. But could someone throw the kind of questions that you think that are helpful on that kind of issue? Well, I suppose the questions you might ask, I mean, there are sort of, there are right-wrong questions, and then there's sort of smart stuff like, and directional questions like, okay, yes, you're doing that because it's like a band-aid to get you to the next level, but what's the longer-term plan? Because you might be, sometimes we are forced into doing things, we just have no choice, but what's the next, where's the next step? I wonder... Maybe I'm just being idealistic, and it's very hard. But I suppose for richer countries like Australia, to spend more on development and finding alternative sources of power, and actually kind of being able to take them overseas, which I know we are doing to some extent here. But that's a fantastic example. I mean, there are people who are making those decisions, and some of those people are actually thinking through this as Christians, on either side of politics. And I suppose the issue is they must have a humble view. Must say we're not God over this planet; we're the stewards of this world. God's God, and so what the decisions I make, wise as I can be. I've got to answer to you know, God's the one who's actually ultimately owns this planet. So it's really tough. I understand. Yeah, I think the big thing I want to say is less on the application. I know that's what but more on do everything we can for the environment, but actually just have a new motivation for God's sake. Yeah.
And it makes me wonder whether is there any solution possible that accommodates greed? And I think a lot of the solutions that are being thrown at us are ones that do accommodate our lifestyle. It's not even put into question that we take a step back from our lifestyle, we just have to say, well, maybe we can't have everything we're used to having. And it worries me that
That's right. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And you can't legislate about it either.
No.
You can only legislate, as you say, to sort of almost play along with the greed, which is quite a depressing outlook, isn't it? But Pete.
Basically, turned around to us and said, what the hell do you want to do?
They said we couldn't do it.
subsidies for water tanks have been halfway through our negotiations with the council. And we said, well, how come the state government's getting people for water tanks in when you're not going to let us put our tanks in? They had to turn around and let it through. But if the state government hadn't been doing that, we would have done that.
That's the funniest thing I've heard.
They're doing that in the country areas already. Yeah, in Queensland.
Are you serious?
But also, they've got ball water is a shared resource, the same as
it rains. Yeah, Ian, sorry. Yeah.
And putting tanks in and using it off their roofs, and it's not their water, it belongs to the system.
Sorry.
Sorry, just jumping off.
Yeah, no problems.
In my field of architecture, there's two different schools of thought on a lot of environmental issues. You mentioned that you studied physics and
yeah.
It's very much reliant on the fact that technology will actually get us through.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of hybrid between the two. I'm sort of jumping to two extremes.
Yeah.
From a Christian point of view, I mean, it would be easy to look at it and say, well, God created the world like this. We should live simply, let's say. But if we do live in a world like ours, we can't go back to... Is technology only about
good question. Okay.
Is technology only human centered in that sense?
Yes. Yeah, that's actually. Do you mind going back to the Genesis one verse? I actually think Ian's made a good point in terms of one of the sort of tensions of approaches is kind of summarizing it, is kind of going back to simplicity or seeing as humans actually as the solution as they investigate new ways. The next one, mate. Yeah. It does seem to fit in here, one of the things about ruling and subduing the earth, that one of the things God's done for us is given us abilities, yes, to create the problems, but also abilities to deal with the issues and come up with solutions. And so I don't think technology at all is opposed to that kind of mandate. It's just we've got to be careful with it because lots and lots of technology that's come along has actually caused more damage rather than less, yeah. So there's stewardship. I mean, whether it's stewardship as in minimising your damage or stewardship as in finding some sort of technology to minimise your damage, that's still the same stewardship, you know, issue. Yeah, Trey.
There's Christian companies that, Compassion and they look after the poor, help us. We give to them and they look after the poor and, you know, third world countries and stuff like that.
Question is there a Christian environmental pump? Is probably, just because it's such a big world out there. What do they do?
There's one called Eden Environmental based in Wollongong.
Mm-hmm.
It's run by a mainly does some awareness work and trying to get people focus on the issues, particularly Christians, but also a lot of work in Africa as well.
Mm-hmm.
So overseas projects. There's a big organisation in America called Sojourners that are involved in themselves, not just for this issue, but others as well. They do a lot of lobbying and that kind of thing. But there's definitely people out there doing.
And they might adopt either of those sort of Ian's approaches as well. I mean, they might adopt a trying to get more technology to deal with the issues, or the other approach of just encouraging simplicity. I think, though, there's probably... We don't really need to have... sort of create a massive industry of Christian environmentalism. I think... Like, in a sense, our distinctive thing is that we're the church. We're all about God and Jesus. And so the big things I think we do is you know, all about God and Jesus. But I think one of the things we can do is to support... have some Christian groups, but also support those groups, or support those things, or even just the lifestyles, the personal lifestyles we can do. Yeah.
Church and Christian-based thing, you as a Christian, you have more chance to kind of witness.
Yeah. There's reasons why. What are the reasons? I mean, some reasons why some of us Christians don't join those groups is because sometimes the whole, like I was saying, there's this warfare, and sometimes the whole worldview of the group seems so against God. But maybe as much as you can stomach it, to make a difference in those groups is a good thing. But to actually believe this, like, go for the same aim, but we can't compromise our worldview. Last question. We better finish up because I said we finish up. Excellent.
I was just going to say, you're saying that greed before, it's kind of just struck me now. I didn't really realize that the politicians never use the word greed. They always say prosperity is the word that they use. Because that's the thing they're aiming for, really.
Yes.
And that's the rhetoric they use, but it's very similar. They're not entirely the same, but they're very linked, you know, because prosperity is about giving people more things, really.
Mm.
And prosperity is the big flat screen television that consumes large amounts of power. You know, like, that's many people's idea of prosperity.
Yes.
You know, it's great.
Yeah, that's right.
And economic growth, that's another one. Yeah. You've got to have economic growth in Western countries. Everything's got to grow. You've got to buy more and more.
Yeah. Now, we've had I think it's been a good discussion, and thank you very much for being part of it. Particularly, I know it was quite a heavy talk. There's a lot of stuff in it. But if you do have time later on to just, you know, go through some of those verses and just think through what actually it's saying, I think there's some really important things. Might be worth, if you want to stay around for a cup of coffee or something, you could talk about two things. How it can actually make this a difference in your home life, and many of us here are from church, how we can make a difference in our church. Yeah. And so we'll have a recycling machine near the door for all the paper. But as I said, thank you very much. We've got a...
Did you get on the... Speaking of recycling.
This night is actually part of a whole series of events we're having called Start the Ultimate Relationship. We wanted to run a night, some really, really... Sunday is going to be a really important day. Sunday morning, think about parenting, really important issue. And Sunday night, thinking about ultimate relationship with God, actually how to begin relationship with God. We wanted to do a night on climate change just because we thought, we've actually got something to say and want to think through deeply what... Okay, maybe not. We haven't gone through all the different solutions to it, but just a bit of a world view shift on it. And so, I do commend to come along to some of the events coming up. Particularly, I think We've got Ultimate Reality on Friday. It's a youth event, and then Sunday, Annabelle Carnegie Community Carnival on Saturday, and Sunday is really parenting in the morning and thinking through. Oh, Peter has put a lot of work into the photographic exhibition, which is fantastic. And tomorrow night, it's going to be launched here at church. And so please be there. What time?
7:30.
And that's right. 7 o'clock. Thank you very much for being here. Come, please stay around for some tea and coffee. That'd be great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Andrew.